What up, what up? What's going on, beautiful people? Jamari here. I'd like to welcome you all back to the Nitty Gritty Podcast, where we talk about the people, problems, and politics of America here on anchor.fm/CNG. We're feeling really mean on episode number 16. Just a reminder that this podcast is available on all major podcasting platforms, i.e. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast. I always mess that up. Google Podcast, Spotify, etc. And we got a special guest in the building, a childhood friend of mine. She's smart as can be. She's very involved in politics, and keep an eye out. You know, she could be, somebody important in the near future. Introducing my friend, Sage Hill. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Sage.
Hello, everyone. Oh, you want like a real introduction? Wow.
Yeah.
You said that you're going to introduce me. Well, whatever. Hi, my name is Sage Hill. I'm a second year PhD student at Old Dominion University. I'm in the Public Administration and Policy Program. I have a Bachelor of Science in Psychology and Communications and a Master of Public Administration, as well as a Certificate in Social Justice and Entrepreneurship. My professional experience is primarily in higher education, and I'm currently transitioning to local government. So thank you, Jamari, for having me.
All right. Thank you for making time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. Just, you know, talk a little bit, you know, kind of get our opinions out there. Let's rewind the clock and let's talk about, you know, what'd you go to college at and, you know, and going on from there. So you went to ODU for your bachelor's. Why'd you pick ODU?
I did. Well, I'm a Norfolk, Virginia Beach native, and coming out of high school, I wanted to go somewhere local, but I also wanted to go to a college with a really diverse campus. And I thought that ODU was the best of both worlds. It allowed me to stay close to my family. I'm still near the beach, so I can get out there and go chill at the ocean at any time. And I can also get that experience away from home by living on campus. So it was the perfect choice for me. Also, the program that I entered was really great. Like I said, I did the psychology and communications programs. Originally, I was doing psychology and speech path, but it wasn't really speaking to my spirit. So communications was the perfect leverage that I needed to get to the next place in life.
Okay. Why was that your calling? Is that what you wanted to do since you gotten to college? Or is that something that how'd you go about making that transition?
So funny thing, communications actually allowed me to be the theater kid that I was at heart. I acted while I was in college, and I also got that public speaking experience that I will need for my career in local or state government. If you can't speak to people, if you can't communicate, then you can't get anywhere in life. And through my communications major, it put me on stage. It forced me to get in front of people and to talk to them and to make those good connections. So it was perfect.
Okay. So I'm guessing you did like Broadway in a sense.
Not even. College theater. It's a very different from Broadway, although I can sing a note or two.
Okay. What was that? Because sometimes people do things that are outside of their comfort zone because they know the importance of it. Did you know how important that was beforehand? Like getting in the theater, getting in front of people, talking. Did you know that it was important beforehand? Or is that something that you were just thrown into you and then you realize its importance after the fact?
I had no idea. I've kind of been acting since I was little, just in different plays or whatever. And I also cheered. So I've always kind of been in front of people, but I also consider myself to be very much an introvert. So once I got into the communications program and started acting, and then once I got into psychology, I realized, hey, these are things that I can use like in the real world. You know, a lot of times people go to college, they don't really know what they want to do and they don't know how it'll affect them later in life. And I originally kind of wanted to be a psychologist or an actor, but I never thought that those two different experiences would allow me to, one, again, communicate with people as a public speaker later, or to be able to use psychological concepts to, again, just really work with people and to know how to make connections that are maintained and usable in the real world.
Okay, so you went to college being practical. Unlike most people, they go into underwater basket weaving and expect to get a six-figure job, you know? Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, it was kind of my own form of underwater basket weaving, because when it comes down to it, the number of people who study theater in college, how many of them are actually actors, you know? But I never really thought that I would be an actor based on when I went to college. That was just kind of from before in childhood. But it was still something that is usable, luckily, later on. That for all of my theater kids who don't know if theater will pan out for them after graduation, you could totally take that career and turn it around and become a public figure or a politician one day.
So I'm thinking, and I'm curious, like, so theater, I think of it like one of those fields, one of those careers that if you don't go to a school that's, known for theater, you're not gonna become a well-known theaters th actor or actress. There we go. I don't know what I was getting at with that. I mean, is that the case? Did oh, do you have a good theater program? Like, do you know anybody that's on, that's in Broadway right now?
I will kind of agree with you that if you don't go to those great theater schools and it's really hard to get into the industry. Off the top, I don't really know of anyone from ODU that has like made it. I know one of our graduates went down to Georgia and she did some acting with a professional theater company down there.
Oh, wow.
I was watching TV one day and I saw another one of our graduates on a channel. I can't remember what channel it was. I've been an extra on TV along with another person. Yeah, it has a great program for getting that foundation of theater, but if you really want to make it in the professional theater world, you have to get supplemental education outside of it. And that's not to speak negatively of ODU's program because it's great. The directors are great, the set designers, fantastic technicians, etc. But you just really have to have that drive and motivation to make something of yourself if you really want to make it in such a competitive field.
Okay, that's with everything in life, honestly. You said you were an extra. What show? What movie?
I'm
Where?
not.
Why not? Come on, talk to the people. We
Have
want to
fun
know.
Googling.
Wow. Can you at least give us like, was it a movie? Was it a TV show? A
It was a
commercial?
TV show.
Okay. Is it Power? What I'm
I'm
saying?
not saying anything.
Oh my
That's one
God.
secret I'll take as far to the grave as I can. Not because I'm embarrassed of it or anything. I actually haven't seen it myself. So maybe when I see it, I will tell people.
Wow. Can you at least tell us the show? I mean, shows have a bunch of seasons. We may or may not even be looking, you know what I'm saying? Like, at least give us a heads up, so.
I hope one day you are sitting in your pajamas watching TV with some like cereal or something, and I just pop up on screen and you're surprised.
So it's a morning time TV show. Okay. That's no fair at all. That's no fair at all. Anyways, so I want to talk about grad school. Like you said, you're a second year PhD student.
What was I thinking?
Oh wow. Oh, well, that answers my question. I was going to ask you, do you regret it yet?
No,
But there
continue.
we go.
What were you saying?
No, I was going to ask you, do you think that's the right choice? Because you've got a lot of people that, in this day and age, a bachelor's degree isn't something. Well, I mean, this is definitely something to brag about. But when you're job searching, if you're going on like Indeed or LinkedIn, the bachelor's degree is the bare minimum. That's the minimum requirements. Then you see the required requirements are master's or PhDs or doctorates, but they're not even paying that much. So do you think that the PhD route that you're going right now is that the right route for you, do you think?
I do think so. Like you said yourself, nowadays a bachelor's is basically equivalent to a high school diploma. So if you don't have that grad education to supplement it, a lot of times you can't get those jobs you want. Or if you do end up landing the job, it's really hard to get job advancement, or they're not willing to pay you as much as you would like to be paid. That being said, when I went to my bachelor's program, I already pretty much knew that I wanted to get a master's because people had been telling me so long that in the field of psychology, you pretty much have to have a master's to go anywhere. So I actually had a very interesting path. I originally majored for my master's in business administration. I had wanted to stay in entertainment and I wanted to do something that would allow me to be more as a manager or on the back end side, like the behind the scenes. And to be honest with you, I hated the program. I hated the professors. I
Oh
hated the
man.
administration. I hated everything about it. It wasn't a place for a young Black woman to thrive. And that was one of the things that really prevented me from doing well in the program, unfortunately. So during the program, I took an elective in the Master of Public Administration program, and it was called Wicket. I saw it on our course scheduler, and I was like, okay, I'll take it. And the reason I took it was because back when I was a theater kid, there were all sorts of classes that were dedicated to different shows or like playwrights, different directors, etc. So when I saw this class with no course description called Wicked, I thought it was about Wicked the show. I took the class and it was the best decision that ever made in my whole life. It was about Wicked problems, which are basically extremely complex, interconnected issues in public administration that can't be solved by one particular answer. And it really made me fall back in love with school. So after that semester, I think I spent one more in the MBA program and I transferred over. I was 40 credits in, I was over it, and I basically scrapped all of that and started all over and to do something that I love. Oh, wow. So I know, crazy, right? So it ended up taking me about 4 years to get my master's. But again, I found a program that I loved. I found my way back into government, which kind of as an aside, I don't think I've ever told you this, Jamari. I've actually spoken at the White House. I was an invited White House speaker when I was an undergrad.
What?
So apparently I was in like government and public administration before I even realized it. And it took me being derailed in the Master of Business Administration program to realize that public administration is where I should be. And now I'm getting my PhD in it. So I definitely do think that this is the right path for me, especially as a woman of color. Unfortunately, I really have to have like my education. I have to know what I'm talking about. Just really have everything under my belt to show people that I am a reputable force and that I'm someone who should be respected in the field, you know? And I feel like other people, especially white males who dominate the public admin and politics sphere, they don't really have to deal with that. But me getting my PhD in this program, that's what I want to do. And I'm almost done.
That's awesome. You got one more year, right?
Yes, I will hopefully be done May 2022.
All right. Well, I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
You spoke at the White House. What was this? Go ahead and kind of walk and talk about that a little bit. That's pretty big. This was a part of the Obama administration, correct?
Yes. During my junior and senior years of college, I spoke at the White House. I worked at the Women's Center as an intern, and then eventually through grad school as a graduate assistant. And through working with them, I became really involved with sexual assault advocacy and just domestic violence advocacy overall. And based on my work there, I participated in something called the Red Flag Campaign, which is to identify relationship red flags. So during my junior year, I presented at the Red Flag Campaign headquarters in, I believe it was called, in Richmond. And the person who was in charge of that forwarded my name to the White House as someone who she thought would be great to have on the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. So from there, I participated in a White House listening session with President-elect Joseph Biden. So that was really exciting. I met him. We shook hands. He said, "Your name is Sage." I said, "Yeah, my name is Sage." It was really cool. I eventually was invited back a few times to participate in different types of workshops and such to work on sexual assault policy. And then my last time up there, I actually spoke as the only student presenter at the It's On Us campaign launch. And President Obama spoke shortly after I did. So I got to see him speak in person and everything. It was really cool.
That's really awesome. Yo, that's pretty dope. Man, that's crazy.
Yeah, I got to be in the White House green room. That was like the coolest thing ever.
Did you like tour the day, give you like a little mini tour before you went there? Or was it just kind of like a straight shot there and you had to leave immediately after?
I have toured it a bit during some of the previous engagements there that I participated in. And then from working with the White House, my family was invited to go to their annual Christmas celebrations. So we went and we toured and looked at all the trees and such. So that was kind of my little White House tour.
That's awesome. And that happened, this tour happened, when did that happen?
That was like 2014, 2015.
Okay, it's cool. Okay, that's awesome though. Man, good Lord, Sage. I feel like I'm meeting you for the first time. Sheesh.
My goodness.
You've been on TV shows, been to the White House. Like, what's next, man? What, you been to the moon? Probably. Goodness gracious.
See, the thing that I tell people is that it's so dumb. Do you remember, I forgot what song it was by Lil Wayne, who says real G's move in silence like the G in lasagna or something like that? It's like kind of, I know, so dumb. But like people who are really movers and shakers, you don't have to be loud when you're doing stuff. You can be very modest and just work towards whatever your dream is. And eventually you will get there. And people are like, oh my God, I didn't even know that you were doing that stuff, you know? Right. And I think that's so much more impactful than the people who are like, well, I'm doing this, this, this. Well, are you really? Mm-hmm. Are you? So like, I don't know. I just try and keep it humble and do what I do.
Oh, wow.
No, I don't even have social media.
Yeah, no, that's the crazy part. Part one, the only few millennials that don't have a social media. That's crazy. What's the reason behind that? You know, I mean, I know, but I'm sure that people don't know. So why don't you have a social media?
So back when I was in high school, I worked at Norfolk Technical Center as an intern. And one of my supervisors actually brought up my social media page. And she was like, hey, you know that everything you put on social media will follow you for the rest of your life. And, you know, I knew it, but it never really clicked in my mind that people were watching what I do. And I wasn't doing anything bad. But that little reminder made me realize that literally every single thing I put up there, someone will be able to find it. Like, even if I delete it, the internet is limitless. Like, people can eventually go and pull things out of the depths of, you know, the dark web, whatever, and expose something that maybe you're not comfortable with the world having access to. So me not having social media, one, helps me take control of my image in a way that I wouldn't be able to if I had it. I mean, of course, I would be the one primarily posting my content, but, you know, your friends post, your family posts, whatever, you can't regulate everything. So that helps with that. And two, it also ensures that when I do finally move to the next stage in my career, that I know that there's nothing on social media that'll prevent me from getting any job that I want. So, you know, I think social media is very important. It helps you stay connected with people, but just always be mindful of what you post. And some employers will hold it against you, unfortunately, if you have something that doesn't represent yourself positively or that doesn't align with the company's mission and values.
Right. And that's a good point. So you don't even have a like a professional one, a LinkedIn, you feel me? A Pinterest. Do you have anything?
I have a Pinterest. I don't think it's under my name, so you won't be able to find it.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just like really dumb recipes and stuff right. that I have up there. I do have a BuzzFeed account. Again, okay. Not under my name. So good luck finding it. But that's it.
Not even a LinkedIn?
I had, I mean, Instagram LinkedIn, like, at one point.
Hey, everybody, yeah. Why'd you delete it? Because of, you know, what your employer said, you know, when it came to.
That was actually my sophomore year of college that I deleted Instagram. But again, just being mindful of what I was putting out there for careers. But no, I also don't have a LinkedIn, but I might be getting one soon.
Awesome. So how are people supposed to find you? You know, are they just going to meet you in the, you know, in the field? Like how are people expected to follow your path? I mean, cause you're very influential. You're doing a lot. You've done a lot. So how are people, you know, if they want to keep up with you, how do they go about that?
You'd be surprised. People are really good at tracking me down. Another fun thing about me and my, pre-public administration history, I was invited to be a delegate for the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women. And the White House actually sent a letter to the school to find me. Oh, wow. So if people are looking for you, they will find a way.
Oh, man. So I should just delete my whole digital footprint, huh?
Everything. No, absolutely not. People want to see that beautiful face.
Oh, man. You're doing too much. You're doing too much. But speaking of being being fired because of the stuff that you post on social media, let's talk about what happened this past week. You know, I mean, a lot has happened, you know, so I kind of wanted to start with, was it Wednesday? It was Wednesday.
It was Wednesday.
What happened in DC? What was your first reaction, you know, when the news started pouring in? You know, what did you first think about?
Oh my goodness. So I was getting dressed to go to campus to pick up a hoodie that I purchased. I know, random. And it popped up on my screen and I was just like, huh? Like, I couldn't even process what was happening, if you know what I mean. Like, I just thought, I hate to say this stupid word, but I thought like fake news. Like, there's no way this is not happening.
Right.
So I get in the car, I drive there. on my way back, I turn on the radio and they're talking about it. Like, I forgot what station I was listening to, probably 103 Jams, but they were just talking about like the White House is being attacked. There's Trump rioters, all this stuff. And it blew my mind. And the first thing that I thought of, which is again, the first thing that I feel like a lot of people thought of, was there would have been no way that this would have happened if they were Black Lives Matter protesters. Mm-hmm. There would have been no way. And I was just shocked and hurt and so happy that I wasn't yet working in that type of position where I was affected by it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not
directly affected by being at the White House.
Definitely. So what does that say about, you know, our culture right now? What you just said about if it was Black Lives Matter protesters, it would have been a totally different, you know, outcome. What does that say about our culture here in America?
Well, we all know that police brutality primarily affects communities of color, especially the Black community. And every time that there has been a protest scheduled in that area, it's the Capitol Police, the Metropolitan Police Department, the FBI, Homeland Security, literally every actor who could possibly be involved is called in to make sure that the protests, which are in a majority peaceful, that they don't get out of hand. And then those protesters are met with rubber bullets, tear gas, shields, other weapons to keep them subdued and silenced. But then on this flip side, you see that the pro-Trump rioters were able to overpower the police force, and in some cases literally have the gate lifted and be let in. It's just night and day response, you know. Mm-hmm. One interesting thing was that I was listening to Mayor Muriel Bowser's her speech, and she said that the Metropolitan Police Department, which is under her jurisdiction, see, the way that it works is that the Capitol Police is I believe a federal agency or under federal control. The Metropolitan Police Department is under Washington, D.C., which Mayor Bowser is in charge of. She wasn't allowed to dispatch her police to help the Capitol Police, you know, because she doesn't have jurisdiction over the Capitol. She has jurisdiction over Washington, D.C. There is no way that that would have happened if it was Black Lives Matter protesters. And even just that simple bit shows you how little care and regard is placed on Black lives or people advocating for Black lives, because, you know, they pull in all the police force to fight against us in comparison to literal domestic terrorists that are attacking the Capitol.
Definitely. Yeah. A lot of people were comparing what was happening over the summer to what was happening, you know, this past week. And over the summer, you know, I did a few protests myself, and then, you know, I didn't go to now the crazy ones like in Ferguson and what have you, but those look like war zones, you know, tear gas everywhere, you know, people who look like soldiers, you know, but they're, you know, police officers, armed tooth and nail, rubber bullets, you know, tear gas, all that stuff, you know, fending off some teenagers or, you know, some young adults.
Children, basically.
Yeah, advocating for, you know, human rights. And then you've got what happened Wednesday, and you've got swarms of Trump loyalists storming the Capitol, literally breaking windows. A Capitol police officer was killed, you know? And it's just like, I feel like there's not enough anger, and there's not enough, you know, fear. There's not enough going on, because I feel like a lot of people see what's going on. It's the norm, you know? We've dealt with this type of rhetoric. We've dealt with this type of, even what happened over in Charlottesville a couple years ago, we've seen it before. So I think people are just assuming this is a norm, which it shouldn't be. You know, what happened Wednesday should not have happened in America. And then you look at other countries, our adversaries, they're like, yo, is it that easy to storm the Capitol? Is it really that easy? Like, people are just looking at it. That's my biggest thing. So I never understood how what we did over the summer is being compared to what happened Wednesday, when there's it's not.
It shouldn't be compared.
It's not the same. I definitely agree. When you look at these news correspondents, and you look at, and I do a lot of deep digging. You know, I like to look at the other side of the aisle, like OAN News, like Newsmax and Fox News, and I like to look at their rhetoric to see how they're doing it and how they're looking at it. And they're just like, well, Black Lives Matter did this. They tore down, you know, burned down a Burger King or what have you. They ransacked the Target. I'm like, okay, but that's not, you know, the Capitol. That's not the most recognizable place in the United States, you know. That's where the president of the United, a lot of powerful politicians live and stay and work, you know. So I'm still baffled by it. It still feels like a dream. I'm not gonna hold you. It literally still feels like a dream. I wake up, I look on the news, and I still see all these people storming the Capitol and just like, yo, this, I'm pinching myself. I'm like, yo, this, I don't know. It definitely still feels like a dream. So, I mean, with the new administration coming in literally 10 days, like, do you think it can get any worse than what it's been so far?
I don't want to really speak on that. Like, it feel like last year we're like, 2021 is going to be great. It can't get any worse than 2020, blah, blah, blah. And then like 2021 hit us like a ton of bricks. Like, it really came in there crazy. Kim and Kanye getting a divorce, which we don't really care about, but it's happening. The riots, like, I really hope it doesn't get worse, but to be honest with you, I honestly do not want them to do like a public inauguration. I want them to do it privately, like in a basement, in their home, in the bathroom. I don't know.
Oh man.
I really worry about the safety of President-elect Biden and then of Kamala Harris, who is one of my sorority sisters. I just really want them to stay safe. And based on what happened on Wednesday, the crazy side of the Trump supporters, they will do anything. They don't care. And apparently the Capitol Police will let them. One crazy thing, I don't know if you've heard this, was that the police chief was nowhere to be seen. And a lot of the higher ups, they like could not contact them. There was an interview done with some of the black police officers, and they said that they've never been called the N-word more times in their lives. And they were, getting attacked by the pro-Trump rioters and trying to call for help from their higher ups, and they were MIA. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but it really makes you wonder, where were they?
Yeah, that's a good question
And
because
I'm
you
not
know.
gonna say, but where were they?
No, that's a very good point. I'm not a conspiracy theorist either. Any conspiracy theorist, rhetoric, I try to dismiss it because I like my stuff to be, followed by facts, factual and evidence, and the conspiracy theories that's what happened with the election and what have you. And it's just it gets tiring after a while. It's cute. It's interesting at first to see how people wrap their mind. How do people come up with these type of outcomes, these solutions in their head? But after a while, it's just like, okay, you must be crazy or something, because you can't believe what's circulating off the internet, right? But I don't know. But so with the new Biden administration, I mean, you've met, President Biden. I mean, pretty cool. I don't know if you have any student loans out, but I know that I do, and I
Oh
know that
yeah.
a majority of Americans have them. So, and one of the campaign, I wouldn't say promises, but one of the things President-elect Joe Biden said on the campaign trail was that he's going to be looking at canceling student debt. So is that something that you expect to happen in the first 100 days, or at all, in generally?
I'm not going to hold my breath on canceling student debt. I am so hopeful that it happens because I do have a good amount of student debt from being in school for almost 10 years now. And I think that if they do cancel debt, that it will help a lot of people to be able to, afford the cost of living better without having to worry about those sizable loan payments. But also it gets down to if they are canceling debt, is it a certain amount of debt that they're canceling? Are they gonna cancel like the debt of a doctor who perhaps has $500,000 in student loans, from med school and such? Is it going to be only 10,000, which won't really put a dent in it for most students? So I do hope it happens. I hope that they roll out a good plan to do it. And I hope that moving forward, that they're not just canceling the debt that people have accumulated in the past, but maybe there's some type of program or I don't know what, but something to make it so that programs that are cost prohibitive for people who don't have funds, and that it won't help just from student loans, that they're able to participate in more programs such as med school and stuff.
Yeah, because that's one of the biggest, deterrents is of going to, getting a higher education, because most people go into to get their undergrads and they're, $30, $40, $50,000 in debt, and they know the importance of a higher degree, but their pockets won't allow it, or the fear of putting on so much student debt. I know some folks that have went to college and you know, 80s and 90s that are still paying off student debt. Granted, they're like doctors and lawyers or what have you, but to be paying off your student debt for that long, it's just, it's terrifying, you know?
It is. But one thing, especially for people who are considering grad school, I always say to look to find an employer that'll pay for your tuition in grad school if you can. A lot of employers are willing to pay if the degree falls under the umbrella. They also often require for you to stay with the company for like a year or so longer. So just look into those options. I also encourage them to look at the schools that they are interested in applying to. Schools like ODU allow you to work there if you have a full-time position. Then they'll pay, I think it might be like 3 or 6 credit hours per semester for you or your dependents. So you could either take advantage of that or you can pass that on to your children. Another thing is to look for scholarships or grants that'll help cover some of your tuition so you're not paying as much out of pocket or using loans. There's actually this one really, really great website. It's called profellow.com. I think it's like every week or so, they post different fellowships and scholarships and grant opportunities that you can look into. I actually have a few fellowships that I found through ProFellow. And that's kind of the last thing, to look for fellowships. Fellowships allow you to get money for grad school, and they also allow you to get experience to supplement that education. So that really helps offset the cost of education. Look for grad assistantships. That really helped me. I've been a grad assistant for a majority of my graduate career. I was a grad assistant for the Women's Center, and now I'm a graduate assistant for the School of Public Service at ODU. And my grad assistantship pays my tuition as well as, well, it doesn't this year because I have a fellowship, but typically grad assistantships pay your tuition and they pay you a stipend. The stipend usually isn't enough to live off of, but you know, if you secretly have a part-time job like bartending or something, it is really helpful. Back when I was in my master's program, I worked full-time while going to school, and that's really challenging. So if you can do that, that's great. But having a grad assistantship allows you to focus on your career, like on getting that experience for your career while still acquiring money that'll be put towards your education.
All right. Hints and tips. You said, what was it called? Profellowship.com?
Profellow.com.
Profellow.com. All right.
Mm-hmm. And it's under the article section, I believe. And I think they also have an open call section, which will show a bunch of different fellowship opportunities. One really, I know I'm talking a lot. I'm sorry,
Jamari. Talk your head off. Come on. This is information. You know, this is important to people. Go ahead.
Two fellowships that I encourage people to look into. One is through George Mason. They have a Mercatus Center, which focuses on economics. And believe it or not, economics can be applied to pretty much any career. So they have an open call for fellowships right now. Look into those. And if Jamari posts my information, you're more than welcome to reach out to me for more information on it. The other one, one of my friends has this fellowship, is through the Southern Regional Education Board. It's for minority students who are looking to go into education. I believe it's a PhD only fellowship though, but they offer a lot of funding and some great experience. And lastly, the Virginia Sea Grant Graduate Fellowship is really great if you are interested in marine or sea coastal related research. That's one fellowship that I have, and Virginia Sea Grant is absolutely fantastic. I think their cycle for this year is closed, but next year they offer up to $40,000 per year in funding that can help you towards both your master's and PhD education.
Nice. I didn't know. Where'd you learn about all these resources? Because when I looked for money for college or what have you, I wasn't sent. Nobody ever told me about this. So I was wondering, where'd you got your resources from?
So even when I was an undergrad, I was really adamant about finding money. If I did not have access to scholarships and such, there's no way that I could have afforded to go to college. So I had a full ride for undergrad because I really searched, applied, and I was able to get all the money that I needed through ODU and then a few other bodies to provide some extra income for my undergrad. Same thing with master's. I spent a ton of time searching for fellowships, scholarships, grants, whatever will help fund me so I don't have to take out as many loans. And that has been really instrumental in getting me to where I am today. So I tell people that applying for scholarships is like a part-time job. Like you really have to be dedicated to it and just apply. And you'll get a lot of no's, but once that one great scholarship or fellowship sticks, then you're really on your way.
It's awesome. So there's no hidden trick. There's no secret. It's just Google, you know, and you know, invest a lot of time into it.
I mean, also making connections with people, because if you tell people what you're looking for and you're serious about your craft, they're willing to help you. You know, for the Virginia Sea Grant one, the reason that I found out about it is because, one, I live in a coastal community and I'm really interested in this research. But through talking to my professors and telling them like my interests, they're like, hey, you should apply for this. So I have a really great mentor who connected me to the people that I needed to talk to get information regarding the fellowship, which helped me get through the interview process and stuff. I also took the time to go to their graduate research symposium that was hosted last spring. So again, just really being adamant, doing what you need to do to make those connections and learning about the organizations so that you can get those fellowships and such.
That's what's up. Now, that's really what's up. Hey, y'all heard it here, people, man. The resources are there. You just got to put the work in. So I remember you talked about it a little bit earlier. You talked about women's representation, even Black women's representation in politics. You know, has that, you know, has, what has that done for you? You know, has that, you know, pushed you? Has that driven you to be the very best that you can be? I'm sure there's challenges to come into it. You know, you being one of, you know, being the only person, you know, being the only Black woman in some of these rooms and some of these meetings, you know, what drives you? You know, that's a tough cookie right there. So what kind of drives you?
It's definitely challenging. Like I said, I feel like as a woman of color, I really have to make sure that I have my stuff together so that, you know, I'm not going to cuss on your podcast, but really have my stuff together so that people respect me in my field. Because even now, like as a PhD student, you'll run into someone who wants to question my credentials, like, why am I here? How did I get here? Who let me in the door? You know, and that's really unfortunate. And my goal is to really pave the way for young minority women, young women in general, minority children in general, just anyone who faces any type of obstacle to reach their goals. I want to pave the way for them so that it's not as hard when they come and follow in my footsteps. You know, other people have done the same for me, unfortunately. There's not as many as I would like in positions in power. And of course, we're still dealing with the pay gap and such. So it's hard, but the goal is to get there, to make a name for myself, to network with other colleagues who are doing the same thing and make it so that other women and other minorities can follow in our footsteps. I'm actually really blessed with my cohort. We call ourselves the squad, you know, paying homage to the squad. It's four minority women who were a part of the last year's first year class for my public administration and policy program. We have two women from America, one woman from Jamaica, and one woman from Saudi Arabia. And we have just been killing it. Like, we go to conferences together. We are published. We have articles that are published as well as book chapters. We're participating in, like, as speakers at conferences. We're doing great. And if you look at other public administration or politics-based PhD programs, they don't look like us. Right. So we're really, really blessed to be in this sphere where not only are we all minority women, we're supporting each other. It's not like we're catty or anything like that. We're honestly dedicated to making sure that each and every one of us excel in our field. And I think that that's really important, because once we get out of the confines of the classroom, it's going to be us against the world, you know, and by having that strong cohort, that connection, we'll be able to bust down so many more doors together, as opposed to just one or two of us on our own trying to make a name for ourselves. So
that's awesome. Did you all meet through the program, or is it something that you met beforehand? How did that go about?
We met through the program. It's funny because no other cohort has looked like us, basically. So we also have something called the super cohort, which is the year before us. It's two more minority women, both from Nigeria. So together, us six, we're pretty much the very few minority women who are in the program. Everyone else are pretty much white males, white females. And there's not even that many white females. It's primarily white males who are interested in public administration and policy. So we just got really lucky.
Right. That's awesome.
And I love my sisters.
No, that's really awesome to have that kind of camaraderie, you know, especially in these, like I said, these rooms and these, you know, careers that you're not represented that well. That's really awesome. So what's next for you, Sage? I mean, you graduate next year. Are you staying in the area? You going abroad? What's the plan?
What is next for Sage? That's a great question. So after this year, I'll be moving on to my dissertation, which is like my short-term thing that I'm looking at. I'm not going to say short-term goal because it's definitely going to happen. Like, it's not even a goal. It's already attained. I'm going to get that dissertation. But after that, I'll be looking for a career. My field is overall public administration and policy, but I'm specifically focused in social justice, as well as emergency management. So I hope to look for a career in emergency management, either in local or state government. So I'm not quite sure if I'm going to stay here. It really just depends on where the jobs are.
Definitely.
But I'd like to be employed.
You got a crazy resume. So, you know, whoever you're looking at, they'll be dumb not to hire you, honestly.
Thank you.
I mean, that's great. Do you have a wish list where you want to go? I mean, Texas, I heard, is great. No property, no state tax, income tax. Let me get it together. You know, California is pretty lit. Florida, you know, everything's sunny in Florida. So if you've got a location that you want to go, like a wish list.
I'm not sure yet, but I'll definitely keep you posted. I do want to stay somewhere on the coast because a lot of my research does focus on coastal issues. So, right. You know, kind of need the beach water to continue to do that research. As long as it's not too hot, not too cold, and it has a coast, I think I'll be happy.
That's what's up.
Oh, also with a diverse population, because, you know, that's what I like.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's where most of the diversity is on the, you know, the coastal parts of America, and the more in you go, the mm-hmm. less, you know, the less it gets. So we'll leave it at that. but I'm at the end of my show notes. And towards the end of every episode, I normally ask the person that's on the show to give like a golden nugget or just something that people can take home from this episode. So, I mean, Sage, you've been an amazing guest. I mean, you've got a plethora of information, a wealth of knowledge, you know, the resources that you've provided are, you know, I know somebody's going to be thankful for that. So, but if you got something that you want to say, you know, the floor is yours, Sage.
So I don't really have much to leave you with, but one of my favorite posts that I've seen since the White House riot occurred was, "We're not asking you to shoot them like you shoot us. We're asking you not to shoot us like you don't shoot them." So the overall goal is not for, you know, the pro-Trump rioters to be killed or massacred or anything like that. At the end of the day, Black Lives Matter and other groups that are advocating for social justice and equity, we're just asking to be treated like people, to receive the basic human rights in order to go out and live our lives and walk our dogs or birdwatch and just do the day-to-day activities that other people are allowed to do without fear of being killed or fear of facing discrimination. So I'll leave you with that.
That was awesome. Well, thank you, Sage. Thank you again for coming on the show, providing everything that you provided. And we are rooting for you. I'm going to keep looking thank for you. Your small cameo or whatever TV show it is. I'm going to be looking. So when I find it, I'm going to send you a picture of it. All right.
You know what? If you find it, I owe you a drink. I will give you a drink.
I'm doing research right now. Let me go ahead. But thank you for everybody that listened, you know, for tuning in to the whole episode. This is the Nitty Gritty Podcast. Also, Sage, what type of contact information? Do you want to just put your email? I'm not going to put your phone.
Yeah, my email is cool. It's SAIGEHILL, M as in Matthew, P as in Paul, A as in Adam @gmail.com.
Awesome. Well, you all know to reach Sage. So if you got more questions, go ahead and ask her or ask me and I'll reach out to her. But thank you again, everybody, for listening in to the podcast. And I see y'all in the next one. Peace.